to Embracing the Real, where we keep things real and discuss topics that teens are currently facing in their lives, such as experiencing anxiety, peer pressure, and dating and relationship issues. We break down challenges and experiences that teens face today. Hear from a panel of mental health professionals and experts and personal stories of resilience from other teens. Thank you for tuning in. Hi everyone, my name is Sharice Imrati. I'm a licensed professional counselor here at Georgia at the Willowbrook Counseling Center. Today, our panel guests are Dr. Michael Lowley, our very own child and adolescent psychiatrist at the Willowbrook Psychiatric Center, and Lauren, our team guest today. Thank you both for being here today. So things are about to get real, and today we are going to be dissecting understanding anxiety. So Dr. Lowley, I'll start with you. Can you shed light on what the heck anxiety is in the first place?
So anxiety, Sharice, thank you, and it's great to be here with you guys this afternoon. Anxiety is our body's natural response to our natural environment and anything stressful from the outside. So the problem is our stress systems, let's go back. You know, this goes back to when we were living in caves and we would be out stalking a large juicy woolly mammoth for supper, and suddenly a saber-toothed tiger would leap out from nowhere and we would get a big surge of epinephrine, norepinephrine. Our cortisol would let our heart beat faster, our vasculature tighten, us breathe quickly, get oxygen to the bits of body we need and help us get quickly back to our cave. But the problem is it's now no longer saber-toothed tigers and it's algebra 2, 285 traffic and 5 assignments a night. So our bodies are just not built for that kind of modern living from a hormonal or physiological perspective. So what happens is we get feelings of fear, apprehension about things that are coming, whether it's school, interviews, being called on in class, specific subjects, academic pressure, pressure to perform and attain certain grades on a consistent basis. Now, anxiety, of course, does have an evolutionary advantage. I mean, it's no longer saber-toothed tigers, but we have to look left and right when we cross the street. And actually, a little bit of anxiety in tests or when we're doing our work can, you know, help us to be at our best and keep our minds sharp and on edge. But if we're talking about an anxiety disorder, feeling of fear can be with us all the time, and it can be really intense and debilitating and stop us accomplishing the goals that we need to accomplish. And, you know, just think, this could prevent you from crossing the street or even leaving home, getting into an elevator, or even making it to school or being able to get a job or engage with other people, period. And this is, you know, one of the reasons I thought this was such an important thing to talk about, because anxiety, if left unaddressed, is something that only gets worse. So there's lots of different types of anxiety disorder. I'll give you maybe one line about each, just in case this has resonance with anybody listening. So we have panic disorder, which is unpredictable panic attacks that come often without any particular trigger. My patients with this condition literally describe feeling as though they are going to die, and chest discomfort, breathing quickly, tremulousness, sweating, feelings of absolute doom, muscular tension. And obviously, if that is such a horrible physiological experience, that if you have panic disorder, you will be on edge and incredibly fearful of having another one. Obviously, then we've got phobia, and that would be a feeling of a specific object, situation, or activity. Arachnophobia, yeah. Fear of spiders. Balanophobia, fear of whales, as in like the blue whale. Galophobia would be fear of whales, the country. Let's move on. I could do phobias, you know, for
all day.
I don't even know what my favorite phobia is. Does anyone have a favorite phobia? I think my favorite named one is probably triskaidekaphobia, which is, you know, it's the fear of the number 13 letters, which is just ridiculous. Anyway, social anxiety. This is, you know, incredibly common in the teenage population I work with, you know, doing well in other aspects, but just novel situations, novel people, incredibly challenging, incredibly self-conscious in those settings, which can have, you know, functional, academic, and occupational consequences. OCD, this is, you know, two parts, the obsessions and compulsions. Obsessions are thoughts in your head that go round and round and round that you don't want. Compulsions are things that you can do that are either physical or mental to get rid of them. And together it's an incredibly limiting and stress-inducing condition. Separation anxiety, pretty self-explanatory. I see it a lot in my younger patients. Illness anxiety disorder, worrying about health and particularly having a specific thing wrong with you. And then PTSD, acute stress reactions, sort of adverse anxious consequences of, you know, being exposed to a particular traumatic event. And just to recap, even though it seems pretty obvious, the main symptoms of stress that I see in clinic, and it can be completely different. It can be being irritable, angry, or just generally out of character for yourself, lacking motivation, having low social or self-confidence, feeling tired, burned out, overwhelmed, and just isolating at home. Sleep and appetite changes are very common, problems with focus, recurrent fears and worries about doing a particular part of your life or daily routine, avoidance of particular situations that trigger the anxiety. And particularly in younger kids that I work with, sort of stomach aches, headaches, physical symptoms, which are, you know, incredibly common. And probably one of the most common reasons people come to see me in clinic and come with their parents is, you know, he's failing school, she's failing school, because how do parents know they're good parents? What grades their kids get? So that's a very, you know, common reason that people, you know, come through the door to my clinic. And quite often, you know, anxiety is a large component of what could be going on.
Thank you, Dr. Lowy. So tell me, from both your perspective, why do you think it's important that we even talk about anxiety?
I think for me, it's so common in today's age. And today, I mean, you just see so many people dealing with anxiety. It's a lot more common than you think. And also, we've made a lot of progress as far as stigma when it comes to mental health, but it's still something that's very stigmatized, and I think it shouldn't be. I mean, it's something that a lot of people go through. So yeah, I think that's why it's important, basically.
What do you think, Dr.
I completely 100% agree with Lauren. I think, I mean, again, my cultural references are a little bit out of date, but there's that wonderful scene at the end of Mean Girls where Tina Fey said, who has been referred to as, and it's not a nice four-letter word, and they all close their eyes and everybody puts up their hand. And I think the experience of anxiety is, again, pretty universal. And I think if we had more dialogue about anxiety, particularly, you know, within teens and within schools, people would realize how common it is. And then things can be done on a more proactive basis to diminish anxiety and provide support for people who need it.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. Provide more education and provide tools to help those manage it better, the more we talk about it and understand it more. So we brought this up, you brought this up, Lauren, talking about reducing stigma. So talking about it, how else can we reduce stigma?
I think a lot of people feel and they notice that there is a stigma when they just don't feel comfortable being around, they feel judged. And so I think trying to be a little more understanding and educating ourselves about it, and, you know, if somebody's dealing with that personally, they're not gonna feel comfortable talking to somebody if they feel judged. So I think just trying to hear them out and understand them and ask how you can help out is a really good thing to do.
Yeah, and I can really agree with Lauren.
Yeah.
She's pretty much better than me at this. We should switch. I'll go back to school. She can start doctoring. I would say, again, the more dialogue we have, and I can tell you that I treat as many cheerleaders, footballers, you know, band geeks, scholars. I mean, I treat absolutely, you know, any kid in school that they are, you know, my patients, and there is nobody that is exempt from anxiety. You know, I myself have it on a regular basis, and, you know, would happily go on record saying so. And I think, you know, the more we know and can get into common understanding that this is something that affects everybody, especially with the increasing academic demands and pressure on teens that we see today, where there's, you know, more standardized testing than ever. The world is competitive literally from the moment you slide out of the womb. I think it's, you know, I think it's something that needs to be addressed way earlier on in the education experience. And I think strategies as to how to manage anxiety can be incorporated into the curriculum and some, you know, incorporation of wellness practices.
So you guys both hit on that, talking about it more openly and getting more educated about it and just being more supportive and understanding others' experience, and then normalizing anxiety, because it is a common experience as a human. We all experience it. Some experience it a lot more than others, and sometimes it can be debilitating. So just understanding that. So thank you for sharing about that. So as we move further to talk about it, why do you think we're seeing such a higher rates of experience of anxiety in our teen population?
Well, I know talking about the standardized testing and just testing in general, I feel like academically there's a lot more pressure on kids today, and they feel that pressure, whether it be from their parents or just people around them, just to be the best or to make exceptional grades. And then also, I think another thing that plays into it is social media, and that's more of a social aspect of, you feel like you have to be a certain way, act a certain way, look a certain way. There's just all this pressure to be like everybody else, kind of.
Yeah, social media is big, what we're seeing, you know, as far as anxiety. There's a lot of all eyes on me, mm-hmm. and having to present to the world. So yeah, that, thank you for sharing that. What do you think, Dr. Lee? Why are we seeing it more from your experience of working with your team?
Yeah, I would say, just to reiterate the points we've already made, I think the need to be performing at your best from earlier and earlier in the educational experience is certainly something that engenders anxiety. I mean, I fear whether I would even get into any kind of college, let alone med school and, you know, my bachelor's and everything else these days. It's ridiculously competitive, and it's not just having a GPA. You've got to be the captain of color guard and playing concert cello and, you know, a wizard at lacrosse, and it's just the, you know, the idea that you've got to do so much, and there is an ethos of competition that I think was not there when I was going through education. And then speaking to the social media aspect, I mean, I was reflecting on this before we started recording, that however the, you know, the most embarrassing things that, you know, I did at school, the sort of the memory of the school was one day long. I mean, I can go on record here again. I had the distinction in my life of having actually slipped on a banana skin. I always used to say, where did that comedic invention come from? Because nobody slips on a banana skin, and I actually did that once. And even that was forgotten by the following day. That these days would, of course, be Snapchat gold, but not Snapchat gold that I would have wanted to be part of, and that would have had a life well beyond that moment. And, you know, led to significant worry, and it also follows you home. It's something that's portable, it's unremitting, unrelenting, it doesn't go away. And I also think that, you know, it was important, at least when I was younger, that before all these media forms existed, you could just go into your room and almost like step off stage and just be yourself and have that time to self-regulate and come out of whatever persona. I mean, T.S. Eliot, in one of his great poems, said, we prepare a face to meet the faces we meet. And I think, I don't know how that sits with the modern social media experience, but I don't think people ever get the time just to step back and be themselves, because it's all presenting our best self and trying to make our experiences less mundane and more fascinating, more enjoyable, more colorful. And, you know, that can come with it, and, you know, an unremitting pressure as well. So I would say it's a combination for me of, you know, the inherent competition of the educational experience coupled with, you know, the all-encompassing nature of how socialization happens for, you know, the current generations of school.
Yeah, we see a lot of that. The comparison, I think, too, mm-hmm. is, you know, comparing yourself on social media. I should look like that, or I should have my life like that. Things of that nature.
Yeah.
It's already it could be hard to be a teenager already when you have so many changes and trying to figure out who you are as a person. So I'm that. So thank you both for sharing. So Lauren, I wanted to kind of bring attention to you because you have your own personal experience of anxiety. So I would love if you could just kind of share what that's been like for you.
So I think that we first started really noticing signs that something was wrong when I was around 8 or 9 in third grade. It was kind of the beginning of a new school year, and I would wake up in the morning and be getting ready for school, and I would get these really bad stomach aches. And the closer we'd be in the car, the closer and closer we would get to school, the less I was able to breathe. And I would have to have my mom most of the time walk me to my class, to the door, and I would just be in tears, crying and hyperventilating, and I didn't want to go. And so after noticing that happening every day for a while, I had to go. We went to the doctors and we did some testing, and at first we thought maybe it was just like a stomach issue, there was something wrong. But after some testing, we found out that I had an anxiety disorder, and after that it was about medication and trying out the right medications, because me personally, I am on medication. And from then on out, I think I just noticed my anxiety, and I started experiencing panic attacks. And with that, you know, kind of the things that will happen that will let me know that I'm gonna have a panic attack, or I am just really anxious, is the main thing is I have trouble breathing. My chest will burn sometimes and tighten up, and sometimes I'll feel really nauseous, like I'm gonna be sick. And then sometimes too, I know it happened a lot when I was younger, it's gotten a little bit better, but migraines, I've had really bad migraines. And now my anxiety, I really notice it start to creep back out around back to school time. That change is a big thing for me. It's not something that I particularly like because of the anxiety it brings. And back to school, just a new schedule, new classes, new environment, getting back into a routine is really hard for me. And going back to school, I'll often have nightmares or trouble sleeping at all. I'll not really have an appetite, might stop eating. And then other things, like school presentations or even just answering a question in class, can bring on a lot of anxiety for me. And then sometimes too, even just going to social events is hard, and going out with friends. I know for a while I didn't really go out with friends. I kind of declined every time somebody would ask me to go hang out and do something. And it's gotten better now, but I mean, even that was, it was just debilitating.
So much, Laura. I'm sure that there are so many others that can resonate with your story, and that is just helping so many people understand, like, they're not alone in this. You know, that anxiety is very common. We hear that a lot as mental health professionals, but I think hearing it from someone that firsthand experienced it has a lot of meaning and power. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad that you touched upon the physical symptoms of that, because usually mm-hmm. that's the, you know, we may think that is a biological component, you know, which you talked about earlier, Dr. Lowley. So, you know, once we kind of understand what we're experiencing, names anxiety, what can we do now? What do we do next? How do we manage it?
Yeah, is this for me? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh dear, yes. I've got to come up with something useful now. I was enraptured by Lauren's account. And I want to say thank you again, Lauren. So brave to share your personal journey in a forum such as this. And that's not something I would have had the self-confidence to do at your age. And I'd say it's a real privilege listening to you speak. How to manage and cope with anxiety. I mean, if I really put this into one sentence, it would be, you know, think of the things that you can control and the things that you can't. And, you know, when you're sitting at school and you're in your junior year, you cannot control how many assignments are going to come flying at you from school. You can't control the number of hours in the day that's going to take to complete. You can't control the fact that you will probably absolutely despise at least a couple of your teachers. It's the natural experience of being in school. And, you know, and again, you know, the drama that comes with being in an educational environment, it's somewhat inevitable. So, you know, I always advise, you know, people I work with who have anxiety disorders or are struggling with anxiety to think about things that we can control. So I would say, you know, literally going from, you know, nighttime backwards, I think it's really important that we get adequate sleep. You know, and your brain is a machine that needs fuel in it, and it needs to have adequate rest. And I think sleep hygiene is notoriously poor for all of us at the moment, but particularly at school when studying is demanding. You know, we need to make sure that we get an adequate quantity of sleep. We need to have an environment, you know, free of electronics and free of distractions. Where possible, the bedroom should be reserved for sleeping, and the studying should ideally be done elsewhere if space and logistics permit. You know, thinking about ways that the environment can be more relaxing. I mean, if you're looking around your bedroom and it's hard to know which one of the five senses are most violated, you're probably not going to relax in there. So I would say, you know, keeping a nice, tidy work environment. I love Admiral McRaven's book about making your bed as a sense of accomplishment. But I think, you know, having a nice, orderly environment to sleep and relax in is really important. And then actually in the mechanics of getting to sleep, there's, you know, lots of nice apps that you can use. I like one called Calm. It's like mood music, and then, you know, different celebrities reading you a bedtime story. I quite enjoy it. Matthew McConaughey, he has a very hypnotic and lovely voice. I increasingly enjoy him over time. If you like my vibe, Harry Styles does a few. I mean, he's got a lovely voice for a bedtime story, but, you know, whatever works. And also scents. I have no corporate affiliations, but I do love a Bath and Body Works lavender pillow mist. Anyway, this is the point where I'm going off-piste. Okay, so sleep hygiene is really important. I think also knowing the limits of how much studying you can do. I think past a certain time of night, we're not going to be productive. I think it's important to set parameters for our study, take regular breaks to make sure we're efficient. And that will include regular hydration and making sure where possible that, you know, a few healthy meals a day, plus any snacks you might need, are, you know, advisable. I would say one tip that I always give to anybody I work with is the harder the assignment in terms of how you can grasp the subject, or the more disagreeable the teacher is, that it makes doing that assignment the day you get it all the more important. Yeah. And sometimes being organized and just displaying visually all the things you've got to accomplish sometimes can be, you know, can be helpful. I think then, you know, sometimes with social media and the world and the news and probably the increasingly divisive political climate we see in the country, sometimes it's nice just to, you know, take a little bit of a fast from social media, a little break from the news. And whether you're, you know, whether you're Anderson Cooper or Sean Hannity, they can both get a little bit grating at times, and sometimes it's nice just to step back and, you know, exist in your own space and think, you know, what's important for me. And similarly, you know, sometimes it's nicer to wake up feeling more optimistic and not comparing yourself to the beach in Bora Bora that Kylie Jenner's currently sitting on while you're in traffic on the rain on the way to a junior year class at high school. So I think judicious breaks from social media can be important. And exercise, and, you know, most people listening do not have the benefit of looking at me at the moment, so this is real hypocrisy at its finest. But I think, you know, doing something at least, you know, a few times a week that, you know, elevates your heart rate is really important. And again, no corporate affiliations. I have a Peloton sitting at home. It is covered in dust. You need one of those archaeological brushes to even get near it. It's so dusty. But I can speak from personal experience that when I have lots of paperwork and I'm tired, I do feel invigorated after a pretty intense 30-minute workout. And I think that can be a nice way to, you know, between school and studying in the evening to, you know, get rid of some frustration and get a break, and similarly return to, you know, your work pretty invigorated. Diet, of course, is important. Again, back into the hypocrisy realm for me. I'm living in a world of convenience food 80% of the time, but, you know, eating well. And I sometimes do this with my patients as well. It's fascinating if you ever complete a food and mood diary. Actually, some of the foods we really like do not make us feel good about ourselves. Mm. And sometimes, actually, what is missing in your life is just a really nice, crisp romaine lettuce. And I think it's, you know, making sure we have adequate fuel for our brain to do what it needs to is really important. But also, you know, the kind of things going in are important. And I think a balanced diet and adequate hydration, I mean, I the statistics as to what percentage of the population exist chronically dehydrated are ridiculous. It's over 80%. So I would say, I mean, we all know that one friend who has got that gallon thing with the markers on it. You don't need to be that person, because that's like, you know. But we don't be that person, but just being aware.
Drink your water then.
Yeah, exactly. Drinking water is important. And then, you know, I mean, and I have, again, the cautionary tale about, you know, I couldn't come on to anything involving advising teens without a token wag of the finger and a talk about drugs and alcohol, because it's just such a central part of my practice day to day. The number of people that I meet who tell me they're exceedingly anxious, and then I find out that the coping mechanisms in place at the time are, you know, smoking weed before and after school with, you know, a beer to fall asleep. And, you know, obviously any mind-altering substance that acts on the brain can predispose us to negative mood states. And intoxication with either marijuana or alcohol is, of course, going to provide an exceedingly temporary anxiolytic effect. But it's certainly not an anxiolytic state that will make anybody productive. You know, obviously it's worth reiterating that such things are illegal. And the come down on the other side, you know, in my opinion, for anybody, is just simply not worth the temporary euphoria that can result from using those substances. Even from parents, I get lots of questions about CBD in particular at the moment. And, you know, I can say, you know, here that there are no convincing studies with any benefit for anxiety from CBD, CBD oil products. I am regularly looking at the first states to legalize. I look at Colorado, I look at Massachusetts to see if there's any decent data coming out of those states. And so far, there is not one single study published in a reputable journal to suggest that any kind of cannabinoid product can help with anxiety in a meaningful way. And I think, even though it sounds like I'm raining on the party here, I think it's important to give that, you know, there is no benefit there for anxiety at the moment. And the second there is demonstrable benefit in peer-reviewed journals, in randomized double-blind control studies, I will be the first person recommending that as a treatment for my patients. But we are not there yet. So I think another important factor is maintaining social connectedness. I think when anxious or worried, it is quite often human nature to want to isolate, think to yourself that you're not in a good headspace to be good company for other people, when really, on any given day in high school, if you were to call five friends, probably at least two of them, if not three or five, will be feeling as anxious as you are in that moment. And I think, you know, shared problems are problems that are generally diminished. And I can speak from my patients' experiences that, you know, once they confide in someone close to them as to how they're feeling, it can expedite the process of getting help if it's at a threshold where coming to see somebody like myself would be indicated. But if not, you know, seeking therapy, seeking help from schools, seeking some kind of accommodation, seeking, you know, whatever help looks like with the severity of the symptoms in that moment in time. Reaching out to other people is an overwhelmingly positive thing. I think actually it would probably be wonderful to hear from Lauren and some of her personal journey and how you coped.
Well, for me, it's kind of similar to what you were just talking about. I think one of the biggest ones is that social connectedness, and I can relate to feeling like, you know, I just want to isolate myself and I don't feel like I should be probably hanging around other people. When I'm in those moments and episodes, but one of my favorite things to do is to text somebody and ask them to hang out. I love to go out for a coffee or go shopping or go see a movie, things like that. Or even just hanging out, being like, hey, do you want to come over? And I think some other things I like to do, reading is a good one. I like to, you know, just go for a walk sometimes. And what else? I think just surrounding myself with people is the biggest one. Whether it be family, friends, my dog, those are the, I think, the biggest ones for me.
Yeah, I like that you talked about pets, how, you know, pets can be very helpful in helping you support when you have anxiety. And one thing we didn't talk into, mindfulness strategies of learning to get more present in the now, because when we're focusing on the now, we can't think about the past or the future, right? We're here now. And there's a lot of free apps. YouTube has tons of guided imagery and meditations that are free. So I would suggest, you know, checking those out. So thank you so much, Lauren. That was very helpful. So to close, I first want to just thank you both for being here today, you know, talking about this. We are, you know, an experience where everyone is coming back to school. We've been in a pandemic for the last year. And so, you know, with all of that, I think it's important that we talk about this, especially for our teens today. Any last comments or remarks that you want to make, just in general?
And I would say, even though we've moved a long way from the saber-toothed tiger, I think ACTs are still pretty petrifying, and I think the challenges are probably slightly different, but nonetheless fear-inducing. And I think being introspective, thinking to yourself, how am I doing? And I think I would always emphasize that it's a person of strength rather than weakness that seeks help from other people. And I can certainly say working, I principally work as a psychopharmacologist and do the medication management side of anxiety treatment, but also working with our therapists, that, you know, anxiety is a condition that we can treat, and we treat it well. And I think that's probably important for people to know, that this is something that the medical system really can help with. I think if your anxiety is getting in the way of your academic performance or your social life, and you're thinking, okay, you know, I'm not doing well with this, I think it's completely appropriate to reach out to someone, discuss it with a parent, a friend, you know, somebody close and trustworthy, and, you know, get some help.
Yes, thank you. So mental health is an important part of overall health and well-being. It affects how we think, how we feel, all aspects of our life, and how we handle stress. So if anything that we talked about resonates with you today, or you feel that your anxiety is getting out of the way, where it's impacting your daily life and your activities for several days in a row, do know that Willowbrook Counseling Center and Willowbrook at Tanner does have a free confidential resource for you, where you can get a free screening at 770-812-9551 to schedule that. Also, I do encourage you to schedule or call your healthcare provider if you also are experiencing high level of symptoms of anxiety or any other symptoms that maybe are distressing to you. Again, I want to thank our panel today, and thank you so much for listening. Thank you.